Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here on a Tuesday, not our usual Monday recording, but as always, doesn't matter the day of the week. Producer Mike is here. Hello, Producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, JL. How you doing? A Tuesday afternoon. I mean, I feel conscious actually recording this.
I don't, because I took the Amtrak back from Chicago and slept. Usually I get like a nice 4 hours sleep.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't great, but it's good enough.
Yeah.
In my little Navy cubbyhole roomette. I got a half hour of sleep.
How far is the trip?
Chicago. Well, I do there's various ways you can do it, but like New York to Chicago, it's a gross train. It's the Lakeshore Limited. It's not the best. That is 19 hours because it goes all through New York State and then through like the Erie area. And then the one I do, for one reason only, and Patreon subscribers know this person very well, and I might as well bless the cheapos with this information as well. Uh-huh. I like to take the train down to D.C., and then you get the Capital Limited, which is D.C. to Chicago. Because on a majority of the trips I've taken to Chicago on that train, I get Carlos, the train attendant.
This guy
saw me on the way out, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, I saw the name, and I recognize you, and now I know that that's you." This guy, Carlos, has the kind of dedication and joy. I have been tempted, except I don't want it to come off weird, to be like, "Would you do like a half-hour interview, like, when we get to Chicago or D.C.? Like, would you?" Because this guy, and I do a great impression, by the way, not a shock, but he does, like, a 6 minute announcements thing when you get on. And I got to tell you, you get in your like nice little clean roomette with your pillows, your two chairs.
Yeah.
You put stuff away and you lean back in your private room and you hear the sounds of Carlos just welcoming you to the train. And he's like, "We are going to have a 3 smoking breaks on this train. We are going to have a smoke break in Cumberland, Maryland. Then we're going to have a smoke break in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania," which leads to my joke. If a Latin guy ever tells you, ladies, that he has HIV, don't sleep with him. If you're going on vacation with a guy with HIV, it's not going to be a fun vacation. Okay. And then the last smoking break is in Toledo, Ohio. But he like comes by your room and he says like, "What do you want for dinner? And do you want me to bring it to the room?" A lot of them do that. But he's just, there's an extra flair. And like, it's like you sit there and go, "God, I wish I either enjoyed what I do as much as he does or could pretend to enjoy. I'm dedicated to the job enough to be like, hey." Like Ted Williams, I think, was it Ted Williams or Joe DiMaggio? Sorry, baseball reference.
I know.
And somebody in Chicago actually
shutting everything off.
Somebody in Chicago, a fan came up to me after the show and he had seen me before. He goes, he said, I love the podcast. And then he said, "Mike." And I said, "Oh, Rain on Your Parade. Nice." And he said he laughs at the baseball stuff. How bad, like, because I guess he's a big sports guy.
Listen, Chicago, also another great baseball town.
Chicago, a great city.
Great city, yeah. But there, I mean, two baseball teams. It's one of the few places outside of New York that I think it's like New York, Chicago, Boston, big baseball places.
Yeah. And that's the thing I've said to somebody, I said, between Pittsburgh and Chicago, I would love to live in that area of the country, to be honest. I know you look down on the Midwest, but as I've said in my, and I'll do this in a Ric Flair voice, I'm a church attending, flannel wearing, Cheesecake Factory eating, fat son of a bitch, and I'm having a hard time keeping my cholesterol down. Woo! That's how I feel about the Midwest.
Yeah.
I go, and it's big portions, full churches,
yeah,
thick ladies, and cheaper living.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with sport, like Cleveland, 3 major sports teams.
I know
all
you
walkable.
Love Cleveland.
Love it. I it's not that I love it because, oh my God, it touched my heart. I find it's like, downtown Cleveland, I was just like, yeah, a beautiful lake right there that basically could be the ocean. It's so large.
Yeah.
3 major sports teams in walking distance. It's cheaper to live there.
Yep.
Like I'm somebody with fairly simple tastes and I'm 6 hours from New York and like eight hours from Chicago.
Yeah.
Like I'm just saying, but Chicago is great. But Carlos, anybody who ever wants to take a train, it's not as cool. The train from D.C. to Chicago, all the trains that go west of Chicago, especially the California Zephyr, which is the San Francisco to Chicago route, the stretch from Utah and Denver is just, it is why I will take that train, because it is that beautiful and that awesome. Speaking of which, new shirt, promises
just
made.
Move that mic real quick so people can see.
Guys, I'm wearing an Amtrak shirt, and a big announcement. This should come as no surprise to anybody who's followed my career, but this is like a dream come true. Brand ambassador for Amtrak. How about that, everybody? Finally getting paid by the people I've been endorsing and taking their transportation like a nutcase.
I'm so happy. Gigs. I'm so happy.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm lying. That didn't happen. I just bought this shirt at Union Station.
You said before we started, you were like, if you could just help me out and do a sell on this to make sure that the audience knows. And then you abandoned it.
No. I just wanted them to think that I got you.
Yeah.
Because then they get got for a second. And then I go, let's move on with the show. It didn't happen. I would love that to happen, where it's just like, take our trains to gigs. Check.
Yeah.
Post about it on social media. Check. Oh, you just do what I already do and you're going to pay me for it. Sounds good. That's the American dream.
Yeah.
To get paid for what you're already doing. But Carlos is great. It's not the greatest route in terms of sightseeing or anything, but he makes it worthwhile. You just feel like you're with a guy who's really just taking care. Like, just thank you, Carlos. Very good. And he's like, we are going to have fresh brewed coffee at 6 a.m. for you. I'm telling you, I put his whole speech on my Patreon like last year, and it's dead. Like, it's very funny. But so I only slept a half hour on the way home, which was rough, because usually I get about 4 hours on that ride, but half hour is like damaging.
Yeah.
Because like all night and even today I've been in a fog until like very recently. So anywho, I'm eating healthy. I basically did the equivalent, the culinary equivalent of like a gay hedonism cruise. Mm-hmm. I was just like, yes, I'll have a milkshake on top of my milkshake sundae on top of my barbecued chicken sandwich on top of my burger. For 5 days.
That's Midwest shit.
Dunkin' Donuts for breakfast every day, as I joked in my recap blog. The more homoerotic the donut sounds, the better it is. So I had multiple chocolate Long Johns.
Yeah.
And then my favorite, though, is a donut you can only find in Boston. There's the glazed stick, which don't call it a glazed cruller because these new kids don't know what a cruller is. Mm. Chocolate glazed stick just sounds like the gayest possible donut order you can make. Like, I just want a black phallic donut covered in white sugar in my mouth right now. So not that there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah.
But you know, it is, I they always have them in Boston because they're all probably too racist and homophobic to actually order the best donut on the menu.
Right.
I'll have a strawberry pussy donut. Don't give me one of that. I don't know why they just turned
Boston?
Into bit. Yeah, that's give me a fucking chocolate. Give me a strawberry donut with a cup of
Strawberry donut.
with a cup of coffee. More Brahmin Kennedy accent.
Yeah, a little more Kennedy.
I will rape that donut. Anyway, you can read all about the trip. My trip. Great shows. Thank you, Pittsburgh people. If you're listening to this and you showed up to the show, thank you. I'd like to thank all 16 humans that bought tickets. But that was obviously very distressing. I'm on a run right now of 3 straight shows where my opener, who gets a fixed amount of money, has made more than me. And I'm being paid, of course, on ticket sold basis. Actually, that's not true in Chicago, but Chicago was a fixed amount for me, basically. But Pittsburgh was fun, but did horribly in sales. But Chicago was awesome. So thank you, everybody in both cities that showed up, but especially to the great people in Chicago. And I was on TV in Chicago. I made it onto Windy City Weekend on ABC, which was cool because one of the hosts is a fan of mine. And I met Richard Roper, the film critic.
Of course, yeah.
He was doing his segment after me. And I said, hey, it's weird when you see somebody you see online and on TV in person because you're like, how do I know you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, it doesn't compute that you're there.
Yeah.
And he was like, Richard Roper. I mean, yes, Richard Roper. Like, of course.
Yeah.
So that was good. And now we're just back in the studio, going to share some things. We're talking something political today. you know, we're 2 weeks from the election.
Yeah.
And our country gets dumber. Like, we're getting dumber. It's getting, Trump is getting worse. We got Arnold Palmer penis talk. We got working in McDonald's, fake working in McDonald's. Like, what is, like, we'll
the
get to this.
Fake working in McDonald's is so funny. Yeah, let's say, we'll get
it's,
to that.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
As, like, if it were in a movie.
Right.
But we live in a country where people are like, yes, like, that's my guy. Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk, and this, you might be able to relate to this the way I broaden this topic. And this would almost be, if we were ever to bring on guests onto the show on a regular basis, this is almost a topic I would want to explore as, like, sort of a long-term project, which is people who either their job has passed them by, like, their industry passed them by, or someone in their industry passed them by. Like, a good example, just on a sports level, before we get to the example I'm thinking of, is like Jahlil Okafor. If you remember who he is, he won a national championship at Duke, was a top three pick, I believe.
Sixers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A classic 20 and 10 guy waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And literally, it's like as he's putting on his hat to become an NBA lottery pick, the NBA plays the cruelest trick on him, which is like, we're actually, Steph Curry has just remade the league.
Yeah.
We are now a lateral defense pick and roll and 3-point shooting league. Like, those are the skills you need. Not back to the basket. Rebounding is important, but only if you can also guard the pick and roll.
Right. This and is what happened catch lobs. To Roy Hibbert, too. Hibbert was like a max player, and then like the year later, they were just like, we don't do this anymore.
It kind of happened to him, but there was rumors that he had slept, Paul George had banged his like girlfriend or something, and that might
have. Is that true? That I hadn't heard.
I'm saying this with legal disclaimer that I had heard, that was one of those rumors, but yeah. I can't, just like Dante West had slept with LeBron James's mom.
That was, yeah, that was.
It's like that kind of a rumor where I can't confirm that even close, but. Because Hibbert was a little earlier than the Steph Curry revolution.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He just kind of collapsed on his own, it seemed. But the point is, like, I would love to talk to somebody like Jahlil Okafor and people like that. Talk to a comedian who, like, you know, it comes back to comedy also.
Call it Sliding Doors.
Yeah. But there are a lot of comedians, which you haven't seen, if I recall from our previous episode where we referenced Sliding Doors.
Yes.
But it's one of those things where I'm just interested, and I think it's self-serving because I sometimes think, like, had I been a comedian in the early 90s, I think I would be more successful. I don't know that, but I think I would be because on pure comedy writing and stand-up skills, I think I wouldn't be relying on social media algorithms and different other things to be worth, to increase my worth as a comedian. So Jahlil Okafor is always somebody I was curious about. Like, what would a conversation with him be like? Like, you are an elite basketball player, but like literally at the worst possible time. If the league had changed while you were in high school, you would have had time to like develop a different game. Clearly, you're a big guy, soft hands, good touch. You could have developed some of the skills. Maybe it wouldn't play to your exact strengths, but you could have. Oh, I just got this. I just Miyagi'd that motherfucker.
Obama.
It was a fly.
Yeah.
It was a fly right here. And I went, wah, bah.
Yeah.
But he, did you say Obama?
Didn't Obama do that with a fly?
Did he? My reference is Mr. Miyagi.
Same. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
I thought Obama, there was like this, like right when the internet was starting to become the internet, did that like kill the fly. And they were like, see, this guy can do anything.
Oh, kill the fly. Wow. But so, okay. That's the Okafor example. But then we're watching the Purge movies, Laura and I, that's like our little Halloween movie set for this year. Now I've seen them all. Well, I should say I saw the first Purge, the second, the third, and then the fourth movie was called The First Purge. It was like a prequel. And I was out after that because that one stunk.
Yeah.
The First Purge is very interesting. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's interesting, the concept. And it has Ethan Hawke. But Purge 2 and 3 I loved. And don't trust the critics on these because it finally answered my question is, but what's the Purge like in the real world? Not in a suburb where everybody has money and it's like they broke into his house.
Right.
Spooky. What's it like if you make $10 an hour and live in a shitty apartment building in a city?
Yeah.
What's the Purge like then? That's what made it so scary to me is like, oh, nobody's safe. Like your neighbor is going to try and rape you.
Right.
There's gangs just walking around waiting for like the horn to go off and go hunt you.
Yeah.
There's rich people who have like military units that just for sport go murdering buildings. Yeah. It was terrifying. But the guy in the movie, the star of The Purge 2 and The Purge 3, which is a great movie to watch, The Purge election year, it was much more on point on like Trump and MAGA than you might have expected from a movie of that.
Dennis Quaid?
No.
Oh.
No. Dennis Quaid, it wouldn't be in any movie that even suggests something insulting to Republicans.
Right.
Tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev. Great performance, Dennis. Dennis, can you give me more Vince McMahon while you're playing
Gorbachev? Ronald Reagan?
Nancy, suck my dick. Great, Dennis, great. I think that's a wrap on Dennis. No, I want to do, if I can do that one more time, the Gorbachev one. Hey, Baldy, tear down the goddamn wall. Oh, so good, Dennis. I'm so glad we did the extra take. Frank Grillo. Now, this is a name that some people will be like, who? Now, if you look at him, you might recognize him.
Definitely.
He was fascinating to me because just like when I watched the Terrifier movies, it's not that they're great movies, but I am, as a sometimes struggling, sometimes barely succeeding artist, there's different paths to success. You know, you can be Leonardo DiCaprio, you can be The Rock, or you can be somebody who just works. You can be Steven Root, the like ultimate character actor who just never stops working.
Stanley Tucci. Yeah.
But Frank Grillo is an interesting case because I'm sitting there watching it and I say to Laura, I go, yeah, this guy, he works. He's in a lot of movies. He's kind of like a well-known action guy. But if this were the 80s, he might have been a Van Damme type. Mm-hmm. Like he might have been above where his like ranking is now. He might have missed his calling as an 80s action icon because he's real fit. He's good looking and he's like a pretty solid actor.
Yeah.
And he's really good in the Purge movies. And he's one of these guys. He's like the real deal. I think he does like MMA fighting and training. And he's like,
I've seen his training because I wanted to have his body for a while.
Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah. He's like ripped without being like Marvel roided up. I think it's like he's a lifestyle ripped.
Even though he is a Marvel guy.
Oh, who was he in Marvel?
He was one of the Hydra. He was like a secret agent. He wasn't in a lot of them. He was in like three of those movies.
Okay, so that's a perfect example of like, he probably, now we're going to get to my point, will look around Marvel and go, but why aren't I a guy?
Yeah.
Like, why aren't I a Marvel? Like, why don't people know me as like Hawkeye? Why aren't I Hawkeye instead of Jeremy Renner?
Yeah.
Like, what? He got roided up so he'd have big girthy veins in his arms, but I lived that life.
Yeah.
But I looked at Frank Grillo in this movie and I said, look at him. He's good. He's good in this movie, in these Purge movies. There's like a realism to him, like a like authentic grittiness.
Yes.
And I looked at him and I said, you know who he's the better version of, but he's having a much worse career? Now, I wouldn't phrase it like that to Frank Grillo because I'm jealous of Frank Grillo because I go, I know who you are. Probably millions of people know who you are, but you're not going to get mobbed necessarily when you go out to dinner. But you're probably making seven figures a year. If you do two of your movies where you lend a sort of authenticity and a to your action movies that may be VOD or whatever, you're getting the big paycheck from your movie. So he probably has a very good life. But he is the better version, in my opinion, but the much well less known version, John Bernthal. Now, John Bernthal is the Punisher and The Walking Dead, and he has one move. Like, well, there's interview John Bernthal. If you'd never experienced mine.
Yeah, man,
So I'm training, right? I'm training with these guys and they're like, they're serious, man. And I'm like sitting there like absorbing it in, brother. And like, he's like a guy who'll say brother a lot and stuff.
He does.
But it's like, I'm a cool dude. Like I'm woke without giving off woke. And like, so we're preparing for the role, right? And I'm like working with my trainer and it's like, that that's what we were doing. Like we were like, so that's him in an interview. He's very like, yeah, man, like things are shit. Like, yeah, I'm upbeat. I'm like,
yes.
And then in movies, my impression of him in a movie. So what, you're going to like shoot the zombies, Rick, That's good. You gonna shoot the zombie?
Pacino in there.
I guarantee you, he is a Pacino disciple. So there's like, but he's become like for that type. He's the guy now. He gets drama roles. He gets Marvel lead. He was the Punisher. Like, so he's living like the best Frank Grillo life.
Is Grillo as good of an actor, though? It's not that I think Bernthal is like a stellar actor.
No, but Bernthal gets to do more.
Yeah.
Like on a purely action to action. Here's how why I think Grillo is a better actor than Bernthal.
Yeah.
It's not a knock. All jokes aside, I like a lot of what Bernthal does. So I'm all kidding aside, like, this isn't really to like shit on him.
Yeah.
But I can do an impression of Bernthal just by leaning into like his thing.
Yeah.
Grillo doesn't have a thing. And I mean that in a complimentary way. Like,
right.
He's just a gritty dude, like, who plays a cop or a soldier, or like he can play a villain. He just lends a kind of, yeah, I believe this guy is a cop. I believe this guy is a soldier. I believe there's something about him that I go, yeah, he doesn't have a thing, because he doesn't have a go-to, because he doesn't need a go-to move or expression. And so that's why watching him, I was just like, I wonder if Frank Grillo ever just goes out to audition for the same things as Bernthal, or like watches his career and goes,
yeah,
I could be in the fucking Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
Like, he was in Billions. We are Billions alums, Grillo? Me and Frank Grillo.
Yeah.
I think we might even both be season 6 alums. So there was no rap party for us to hang out, unfortunately, I should say, there was no rap party for me to go to.
Yeah.
For us to hang out. I believe there was a rap party.
Yeah.
Apparently crushing one episode wasn't enough. You've got to crush multiple episodes, yeah. I guess. I think Brian Koppelman kind of knew. That's why he kept me to one episode, because he was like, I mean, if he does this again, we might have to submit him for Emmy consideration. I mean, did you hear what that theater critic said about him in Dictator for a Day? Anyway, yeah. But this was just going on my mind, because like I project my own regrets and spite onto other people. And it just had me going like, I wonder if Frank Grillo is like content where he is, because I think he has probably a very good life. Or does he have a sort of mode where he's like, yeah, but I should be a bigger name in the sort of action adventure space? I'm just curious, like, you know what I mean?
It's so weird, because I'm looking now at like at the Frank Grillo
IMDb,
and yeah, I mean, like, there's just not a lot. He's worked a lot,
right?
But a lot of it really is just like shit. And I don't think it's really his fault.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of like
he was in Gangster Squad. You ever see that movie? That's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Okay.
It was Sean Penn and Josh Brolin. It was about Mickey Cohen.
Isn't that rough, though?
So bad.
And if you're Frank Grillo, you're probably like, I'm going to be in a movie with Josh Brolin and Sean Penn. I got to do it.
You're right.
But to me, it's almost like when I see somebody who does like, who's like worth $50 million, who's like a star of like Christian movies or
Kirk Cameron or something.
Or Christian rock or something where you're like, but is this what you want to do? Or did you just say, as a business decision, I can live the life I want to live playing to an audience that's there for me. So like Frank Grillo occupies this space that financially I'm sure works for him, but I think he's better. Like when I look at him and John Bernthal, I go, why? Unless you find out, Frank Grillo once like punched a cinematographer in the face or something. Like,
no, but that's the thing.
And I don't think that's
there's
it.
There's a ton of work. It doesn't. Right. It's right. Not like he's not working.
Right.
And I actually think he's got a pretty good reputation.
There you go.
I don't think he's got a bad reputation.
Good.
I just think it's like you're probably right. They're probably just like, you get into this rhythm where it's like being pigeonholed in a way where it's just like, that guy can like ride a motorcycle and like throw a grenade and like just throw him in this fucking thing. And at a certain point, you probably just, if you're him, you're probably, he's like 60.
Wow.
He doesn't look that old.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that alone.
Yeah.
Like that alone is fucking impressive, because he looks fucking great.
He's definitely, yeah. I think he's like 59 or something. He's not really a young guy. But he looks great. Yeah, he's 59.
Wow.
So it's just this thing where it's like, you know,
I want people to look up Frank Grillo while they're listening to this before we get to the main topic. Because like, you may be going, who is this guy? But I'm saying this.
You know him if you saw him.
Right. Sure. And if you like me, you would understand why I'm interested in people like this. Because I'm at that point in my career, if we can call it that, where I'm like, do I need to make some kind of pivot if I want to continue in the comedy space?
Right.
So that's why I'm fascinated by people who've carved out really successful careers that might not necessarily immediately look like the Hollywood success fantasy.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know what is a fantasy to a lot of working actors? Constant work.
Yes. having 200 credits, which is what I think Grillo's worked a lot.
Right. So and some weird, of those man. Things They're, are big. Some of them are big.
You know what's funny? It's so funny that you bring this up, because when you watch, if you watch football on Sundays, chances are you see a lot of commercials for shows that you would just like have never known about if you didn't see, if like on CBS and Fox, just these shitty fucking shows that you're just like, who is watching this?
My mom enjoys the Chicago shows.
The
on
Chicago,
NBC
yeah, Chicago
and
Wednesday.
Blue Bloods.
Yeah, right.
She loves them.
So it's just this thing where you're like, that is an industry. There is a whole, there's 100 people between the actors and the directors and the gaffers and all the people.
Soap actors. Yeah. Like soap operas stink. I'm sorry. They stink, but like you can live a great life and it's an entree.
Worked for years, 20 years, just doing a part on one of those shows. And it is crazy that there's like, so the Frank Grillo's, it's almost like, why feel bad for him? Is that he like,
because I'm projecting.
Like, I know. But like, he's actually he's almost not an example of like, of this. Like, he's not the Jahlil Okafor example, because like Jahlil Okafor was in and out of the league. Whereas like Frank Grillo's, you know,
Frank Grillo's the
Danny
guy
Green.
Like the guy
Frank Grillo's got a 20-year career
right, at
you're
the end
like,
of his career.
He's got three
like,
rings and like he made $100 million.
Right.
Like, he worked out for him.
But you get, I think, I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but I'm saying just people who
miss the boat in a way.
They missed, they are on a great boat. Right. Like even Jahlil Okafor, wherever he's playing, is making more money than the average law firm attorney.
Right. It's probably like a star in Turkey.
Yeah. Whatever it is. But like Frank Grillo, it just struck me because watching The Purge Anarchy, like Laura was like, oh yeah, he's very good looking. And then he's one of those guys where you're like, he's believable. Like the whole point of being an actor is like, are you believable in this movie?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not like you're watching him and like, oh, he's super ripped, but not a good actor. You're like, no, he's...
Well, but the question is he a good actor? Because I'm looking at... if we're using Bernthal as the example, which I do think is like a pretty fair comp.
If Bernthal and Grillo's agents trade place,
but so this
that's
is the thing.
My question.
Bernthal has done enough other prestige stuff where he is not holding a machine gun.
Yeah.
So the question is like could...
He played an artist in Billions. Frank Grillo played an artist.
Did he?
Yeah.
And he wasn't like guy?
No, he was like a tough artist. Like he was like the artist who's like, I'm not into the fucking bullshit gallery stuff. Like I do my art. Like so he there was like a renegade aspect to him, I guess. But
because there's a mix here in the Bernthal.
Well, he put on glasses and was in Origin as like the woke white husband. Well,
Ford versus Ferrari. He plays Lee Iacocca. He plays.
I'm Lee Iacocca. We got to win this race, okay? Followed by, doing Ford and Ferrari was a great opportunity for me. Like, working with those guys, it was like the best.
Yeah, man, I'm just like all about the work, you know? He's all about the work. But he showed up in enough of these shows where he's not really playing like a tough guy.
Of course.
You know? And I don't know if
Grillo's
got that going.
But that might be the luxury, but I think that also might be the luxury of being an A-lister. Like, now his name carries weight.
Right.
Like, once you do The Walking Dead and The Punisher, you now have a big brand awareness.
Right.
And then you do a small role in Wolf of Wall Street that I guarantee you, since he was a tough guy in that, Frank Grillo could have been in the Wolf of Wall Street.
Sure.
And then you start to see, like, did Grillo just kind of go, did he get out to Hollywood and, like, get a good agent and, like, got work but never broke through? And then you just sort of say, well, you know what I can do is make $2 million a year doing two action movies and, like, some guest roles on TV.
Well, you know, one of the most famous versions of this is, you know, that
J.L. Covan on Billions?
No.
Okay.
You know, Tom Selleck was supposed to be Indiana Jones, right?
And then
he was like fitted for the whole thing. And then I don't know if it was like a conflict with Magnum P.I. There was some conflict where
he had
couldn't
to sell
do
reverse
it.
Mortgages.
But he was supposed
Indiana
to be
Indiana Jones and the suckered senior. Dun, 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 dun.
He was supposed to be Indiana Jones, and then he had to drop out, and then Harrison Ford did it, and then it became his thing. And then remember Quigley Down Under?
Yes.
Like he tried to do like another, like, I'm supposed to be this guy.
It's a good movie for him because it's like, I'm going to do the only other genre that accepts men with mustaches. Yes. So it was a smart pivot if it had worked.
But at the same time, it's like, you look at the Tom Selleck career, still pretty good, you know?
Great.
Yeah.
And dated peak Monica on Friends.
Right.
I will say like that just, and a guy who's done it in reverse is Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
And no, no, in a, no, and this is my point. Russell Crowe was A of A list.
Yes.
Box office gold, critical gold.
Yes.
Gladiator is still just one of the best. Mm-hmm. The movie rocks and he's so good in Gladiator. Like that's so rare, the kind of action movie where the, you can still look at the guy and go, great perform, like yeah. great performance.
LA Confidential.
Sure.
Oh, dude.
But then he's decided in these later years to like, almost go with the second tier. Like these movies he's in are almost second tier without Russell Crowe. Like if Russell Crowe's not attached to it, it's VOD.
Yeah.
And, but what I love about it is that Russell Crowe does not give an inch. He is still like, when I saw The Pope's Exorcist, I wrote on social media, I was like, some of you might think I'm crazy. Russell Crowe is like going for it in this like mediocre horror movie and it makes it fun. It makes me care because it's like, it's almost like watching a team that's like barely making the playoffs, but it's like,
yeah.
But look at Russell Westbrook go for a triple double every night and leave it all out on the floor. I love watching this because you have a star who is not mailing it in. He's like mailing in his choices of movies he picks.
Yes.
But once he's there, he's like, well, I'm fucking Russell Crowe.
Well, because you know who else did this?
Marlon Brando?
My guy, Nick Cage.
Oh.
Nick Cage went
But his was like, wasn't his financially motivated? Like, didn't he have to?
I think
kind
he owed
of?
A lot in taxes, right. But I still, yeah, because now it seems like he's doing like good movies.
Now he
again.
Gets credit. Now yeah. It's like he's weathered that storm and is doing like, in. Whenever somebody says of a big actor, like he's doing interesting work right now, that's yeah. a compliment.
Yes.
Like,
oh, absolutely.
Also and, means and you're making true. Weird choices that might not be making a lot of money.
Yeah.
It also means that.
But Russell Crowe, I wonder if it's the same sort of thing. Because it is some of the movies he's making. It's such a great point to bring him up because he's making movies like, did you see that one? I didn't see the movie, but it looked wild. The movie Unhinged.
I loved it. That's like the first of the Russell Crowe fat yeah. choosing bad movies and doing great work in yeah. them. He is so committed yeah. in Unhinged. I loved Unhinged.
Yeah.
Like for what it is. You liked it too.
I didn't see it. I thought it's been on my list. I wanted to see
it's
it.
It's on
though.
Netflix I just, now. I just it's like remember, the number two movie on Netflix.
I remember seeing the trailer going like, this looks horrible, but awesome at
yes,
the same time.
But it's not even horrible because yeah. you're almost in disbelief. You're like, that's Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah.
Like in this VOD level movie, but he's like menacing. And like, I love that about him, that it feels like he can't do a bad, like in her Thor Love and Thunder, which everybody yeah. panned.
It's a bad movie.
Because it was trying too hard.
Yeah.
That movie was trying way too hard. The third one didn't really try too hard.
Right.
It hit the notes. And then they were like, what if we do more?
Yeah.
But for me, what worked, Russell Crowe as like Zeus as Greek diner owner.
Yeah. Yes.
Because he, yes. like, and I that sounds funny, but right?
Yes.
But he was like, well, he's Greek, right? Diner owner. Come over here. Like you want the eggs? Like it was like, it felt like he was pulling something from real life and it made it hilarious,
yeah.
but intentionally so. But the point is Russell Crowe's doing it in reverse, but I just, it's a guy like Frank Grillo while watching the Anarchy movies, the Purge movies just made me go, I wonder, I would love to in a non-insulting way because I wouldn't want to insult somebody's work choices.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. Like, did you come to a moment this comes from a place of respect for your talent. Did you come to a moment where you said, I'm not breaking to the A-list level, so I'm going to dominate the B-list. I'm going to dominate B-movies and do good work that I'm proud of and pays me well and just keep working and keep getting my name out there and my face out there? Or did you never have the desire? I assume you did at some point to be like, I want to be at the John Bernthal level or at the dare I say it, the Dwayne Johnson level or something. Mm-hmm. I'd just be curious because all I kept thinking was I like him more than John Bernthal. Like if I were an agent, which is another reason I'm not, if I had to choose between the two of them, I'd be like, oh, give me Grillo.
Yeah.
They're both fine. But I think he has more, oddly enough, more range because I don't see a thing. I don't see him doing like a tick or a, yeah. So anyway, that's some random nonsense, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, politics, everybody. We're 2 weeks as of this recording from the election, and things are getting weirder. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Very good. Very enlightening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We continued our talk, our Grillo talk, and that's it. We're done with that. Let's talk politics. That's what the people come here for. We're 2 weeks away from the election, Mike. Are you prepared to endorse a candidate?
I am prepared to endorse a candidate, yes.
And who is that?
I will be voting for Kamala Harris.
We love to hear it. We love to hear it. I think that will tip the scale in New York officially.
I have all that influence.
Just like my vote will finally win Jersey for the Democrats.
Yeah, right.
It's very funny that less than a year ago, I was supremely confident. I was supremely confident in Biden defeating Trump. And if you had asked me, well, at this point, if we replace Biden with a younger, more energetic candidate who jolts the campaign with some enthusiasm, do you think Trump could win? And I said, oh, in that case, definitely not. Like, I was sure that Biden would win. The debate obviously changed some things and Biden left. But I am disturbed at how unsure I am going into this election, because Trump continues to push the boundaries of taste and sanity. Like, he obliterates his own horrible standards. I mean, Arnold Palmer's dick is...
I missed this. What happened? So I don't think I saw this.
He was talking guff. And I know I shouldn't say this. You know, I respect the women. I love women. But when the other golfers would shower with Arnold Palmer, they would come out and say, my God, you wouldn't believe this guy. You know, I guess, like, with Arnold Palmer being the Milton Berle of the PGA, right, apparently.
Right.
And that's weird. And, like, it's...
Yes, it's very weird.
But it's, like, it's beneath... It's like... I'm sort of, in a way, speechless. Not because that in and of itself is like, oh, my God, you talked about... No, that's not it. It's that you're running for president and you don't, this is the, it's like, see, I don't have quite the words to express how unpresidential it is and how unserious that reflects on us as a country now. Like that he can, Haitians, I mean, in the last month, let's just do a rundown. Haitians are eating pets, false and ridiculous, made it a debate point. Selling like NFTs and $100,000 watches, because you know all his supporters can afford that. No, it's like money laundering out in the open.
Right.
It's like flaunting campaign finance laws in the open, like buy a Trump watch for $100,000. Oh, okay, yeah, we'll all do that. Talking about Arnold Palmer's dick during a campaign rally 2 weeks from the election. What was the other thing he just did? Oh, Jesus.
Well, the McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, I was this weird stunt of cosplaying McDonald's worker.
Yeah.
These are the people that his supporters will, of course, always say, like, they shouldn't get 15 an hour. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird and so bizarre.
Well, and then there is also the thing that I sent you where he had that talk with the woman from Fox News, mm-hmm. where there was like a woman's town hall.
Oh,
and he was like, I'm the father of IVF.
Yes. Right. And the whole town hall was like,
women were like walking up to the microphone crying about abortions. And he was like, listen, it's liberal in some places. We're not even going to, I can't even do it, but like, it's not going to be that bad in places like Ohio. It's very liberal.
Sort of a jail greatest impersonator sort of thing. We're seeing him on his Lincoln Center play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Cause Laura just got this huge.
How much do those cost? $700
well,
per ticket?
Normally, what we would do every winter, I'll give a little peek into JL's personal life here. Every winter, I would just be like, pick out like four plays and go, you want to see this? And then buy a bunch of tickets. So yeah. We have like our theater month and a half. But she's killing it right now at work, and then got this very large class action settlement, like a labor violation from her old employer. And I said, okay, here's the thing. You're going to buy the hockey jerseys, which with my discount, we got a nice, we got like $100 off. And then you're going to buy the play tickets this year. Cause I'm old fashioned, gents and ladies. I don't really like being like, can you do this? But it's like, at this point I was just like, well, you just want a like nice lottery ticket basically. So you can splurge for some stuff. So it's her treating me now. So it didn't matter how much those tickets were. It's sort of a class action settlement sort of thing. They're expensive.
I bet.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were.
But we're like third row.
That's kick ass. Anyway.
So it's going to be me chuckling at Robert Downey Jr. being Robert Downey Jr. and Laura fluttering her eyes and getting like flush.
Yeah.
Because she loves Iron Man.
Of course. Don't we all?
Yeah, that's how Elon Musk definitely sees himself.
As Iron Man?
Yeah.
He was in Iron Man too. Oh, he had a little cameo.
That's why it's the worst one.
No, sure. I think 3 is bad, but okay.
A lot of people like 3 though. 3 has had that like revisionist, like it's actually really good. I've heard a lot of that. Just saying. But anyway, McDonald's, the father of IVF, at a women's Q&A where they're all pre-screened Trump supporters. I've said all I can say about America and how shameful this is, but we're really at this point where I feel like our brains have been melted into, we now view too much as content and not serious. This isn't to get people who then write in and go, I am deadly serious about this. I know the deadly serious people on either side have chosen their votes and will vote and will donate. I'm talking about the kind of like middle voter that is just sort of like, politics is like bullshit and entertainment, and I'll get around to voting maybe, or I'll vote for Trump because I just get a kick out of him. It's really, I feel like we're in some sort of weird, I don't want to start sounding like a guy who's lost his mind a little bit, but it's starting to just feel like, you know, when people say like we're in a simulation, I'm not saying that, but I'm starting to be like, what is this? What are we doing with life? What are we doing with this society we've built, this gift of life? Whether you're a person of faith or an atheist, we are blessed religiously or secularly to live, to exist where we do and have the privileges and the opportunities that we generally do. You know, there's hardship everywhere. There's tragedies and awful things everywhere. But on average, it's pretty good to be here.
Yeah.
And we are sort of like in this, it feels like we're in the kind of weird space now where I feel like we're just kind of like, life is like a plaything. It's like a thing we're in. We're not lit. Like, and I feel like you'll be shocked that I blame this on like, you know, cell phones and internet and things like that. But it's the fact that he is this viable candidate, I've said it before, there's no other time in American history where a man of his lack of substance and of character and of skill would be viable. Like even the demagogues and thing, demigod, like the who have like Huey Long in Louisiana is a famous example. But he's also a guy who was like a shrewd tactician and actually delivered things for the people he said he would deliver them for. Right. He was like, I'm a populist. And you know how I'm going to get people? I'll actually have to give people things.
Yeah.
Not just tell them I'm a populist and do the shit they still hate. And they're dumb enough to go, he's my guy.
Right.
Like it used to be where you had to keep a promise to people, not just give them vibes because they're stupid. That's why we're in a world like Trump couldn't have made it as like a populist or a demagogue in other times because people would still hold you accountable and like, be able to do A plus B equals C. They wouldn't go like, well, it's weird all the rich people getting a tax cut from our populist president, but that's my guy.
Yeah.
That's him. And they wouldn't be able to ignore economic data just because they felt like saying it was a bad economy. Like it's so I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think with 2 weeks out, I didn't think I could keep getting lower. Like I didn't think it would keep going like, oh, he's just, he really is testing the bounds of what like humans and MAGA will tolerate as like proper human behavior.
Well, I think that it's very interesting to me because I think, to piggyback off of your point in a way, I think that the internet and social media have made it so that obviously you're picking your side and there really isn't any sort of nuance because, I mean, I think that there's probably plenty of things that Democrats could do if you're like middle of the road that you'd be like, well, maybe I don't fully agree with it. We talked last week or 2 weeks ago about sort of like the drag queen thing. Mm-hmm. And again, that became a conversation between you and me, you and I, basically being like, what's the big deal on my end, at least?
Yeah. But, and me being like, it's not a big deal to me, but I can understand why some non-cynical, non-manipulative people would be like, I don't think that's necessary or wanted at my kids' elementary school. And I know we differ. We don't have to get into it. But I was like,
but it's not even the nuance of that difference. It's the idea that like Trump can run those ads about like drag queens and all that stuff because it's not necessarily untrue. Like the left does support that.
Right.
So the question now is, as like an American, the decision is on you to say, like, do you support that agenda? That is a leftist agenda. Mm-hmm. I personally don't care. I support it, like whatever. But like Trump can run ads where it's like Kamala and a drag queen because like Trump for you and Kamala for they, them.
Yeah.
Like that is weirdly a fear from that side of the aisle in America. And the other thing now with social media is if you are a Trump person and just like a new Republican, whatever that even means, the echo chamber is going to feed you all this stuff that said, whether it's even true or not, there's almost no way to fact check any of this shit now. And you're just going to, it's basically creating a world like from your phone to your brain that exists, mm-hmm. whether it actually exists or not. And
your
voting
yelling.
Interest is going to be based off of what is fed to you.
Yes.
Whether it is actually the truth or not. So like your points about the economy, record economy, like whatever, they're opting into not believing it because I'm sure there's some stat somewhere from whatever they follow that just hand waves it away and says that this isn't real and this isn't true. And if you're buying into that version of your reality, happens on the left too. But I just think that
can I give you the difference, though? I've had this happen on the left where me or friends or people I follow have shared a story.
Right.
That's like outrageous. It feels like it's kind of real. And then what I'll see by the end of the day is people either commenting on mine or commenting on their own thing going, guys, sorry, it's believable, but this story's fake.
Yeah.
Because there's no desire. And I'm sorry, this is a left-right issue. There's no desire on the left to get you with fake stories. Like we want to get you. We want to prove Trump's a piece of shit, that Republicans are like bad or whatever the simple thing is. But like, if I find out a story's fake, I'll delete it. Right. And I'll be like, oh, it's fake. I won't go find six more people to tell me it's true. And then like, I have had people on social media recently just saying things to me that I'm like, I told somebody, I said, you're too dumb for the truth to get through. Mm-hmm. You would rather believe, what I would say to Republicans.
Kubi used to say facts have a liberal bias, which always used to make me laugh.
Did he take that from Stephen Colbert or did Stephen Colbert take it from him?
Was that a Colbert thing?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe he took it from Colbert. Then.
Okay.
But I had only heard it from Kubi, but it used to make me laugh.
Yeah, it's a great line.
Yeah.
But I look at this and I say, okay, Republicans. And I this is the other thing. I met a Republican. A guy came up to me after the show with his wife and he said, he's a Republican, but he hates Trump. And I said, well, because Trump isn't a Republican.
Right.
Like that's the thing we've come to learn. Republicans, a good-natured Republican or a well-meaning Republican, can have a real value system and a belief on strong foreign policy and encouraging business through low taxes and fewer regulations. Now, there's obviously reasons to argue against that, but you have the classical Republican model has arguments and data to say why, like to support why they feel these things work. And then you can argue, well, some of these things, here's reasons why, or at least the way you apply it, doesn't work.
Right.
MAGA has nothing to do when people are like conservatives. Like, no, they don't. conservatives, you can't whitewash the word conservative anymore. It's MAGA. MAGA is like a lying, racist, populist movement.
Yeah.
Like, we're populist, we're xenophobic and bigoted, and also our leader lies to us, and we're okay with that because he's actually not a populist. He speaks in populism and governs as the most elite of elites.
Right.
Like, it's absurd. But that's what MAGA is. It's MAGA is people who, you know, instead of a dominatrix, like Trump to step on their balls and drip hot wax on them. And they go, oh,
yeah.
That's what they like. That's what they want.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that we're still here. And I get it. We have to have the election. And I hope people come out for Kamala Harris. And I do have some thoughts also on people of color who vote for Donald Trump.
It seems like it's swinging that way. Am I wrong about that?
This is what I think. This is a special message for people of color who vote for Trump. And I'm not talking about the hardcore Catholic pro-lifer Mexican guy. Although I would argue, as a Catholic myself, let's have a real talk about, is abortion the only form of life? Is a fetus the only form of life? That's the question I feel like that needs to be. Because you're pro-death, a lot of you are pro-death penalty.
Right.
Which is directly against church teachings and also not pro-life. Because the whole point of pro-life is not a context-based conditional form of embracing life. That's the whole point, is that it's about you don't judge. You can punish, you can put somebody in jail, but that life, whether it be a fetus or a murderer, is the province of the Almighty to make that. That's what being pro-life really means. It's not an a la carte menu of like, I don't like him, so kill him.
Right.
I like her, or I like this baby, or I like this collection of cells at 7 weeks. They live no matter what. So it's the whole thing is like a false. It's like a MAGA Christian. It's not a Christian. Sorry. And I'm not speaking theologically. I'm speaking common sense. A MAGA Christian is not Christian. Plain and simple. Like, a jumbo shrimp is still small.
Yeah.
Like, it's you're still not. You are a Donald Trump devotee, and you are trying to put square ideologies into round holes. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, so when it comes to people of color voting for Trump, you are a fucking idiot, whatever the color. Like, I made this analogy on somebody else's show, but it's like trying to reverse engineer your principles. Mm-hmm. And let me be clear, first of all, you're a bad person if you vote for Trump. That's all. You're a bad person. Sorry, you're a bad person. But if you're a person of color, you're either a dumb person, a bad person, or a dumb bad person. But at least with the white people who vote for Trump, I go, yeah, but they dig the white supremacy.
Right.
Like, they can maybe get something out of this, right, either culturally or monetarily. Like, right, they can win a little bit with this. Like, yeah. So I don't necessarily think it means they're dumb. But to vote for Trump as a person of color, it's a lot of times they show like I think there's especially among like Latinos who like Trump and black men who like Trump, there's this kind of reverse engineering going on, which is like, well, only like if I vote, I'm not dumb. So if I vote for Trump, that really means that I'm doing well because I'm looking at things other than my skin color and how he treats my people. Or how he disrespects the communities I come from. But because I'm ignoring that, it actually means that I'm not a victim. And I'm not a victim of Trump. And I'm doing well because a person who is being mistreated by Trump and a person who is not doing well would not vote for Donald Trump. But it's like, it doesn't work that way. He's a racist. He hates people like you. And you voting for him is only going to make somebody like Donald Trump have less respect for you, if it's even possible. It's like, look at this. To prove that they're worth something, they're willing to vote for somebody who thinks they're worthless. So it's the same reason I think so many Latinos kind of don't want to be lumped in for a lot of different reasons, because we all know in Latin America, there's always been sort of a color-based racism in a lot of countries, and Haiti, places like that, like a colorism that is basically racism of a different name. There's this, like, if I side with the black people, the colorism comes in, but also this idea of like, well, they're like the most mistreated people, and they're, but I don't want to be in that group, because does that make me by association now a victim? Does that, no, if I stay with the white people or the Republicans, I am part of, I am by association, I can say, clearly I'm not a victim. Clearly I'm doing well. That's why I'm in this group. Because if I wasn't, then I would be crazy to be in the MAGA group. Mm-hmm. But I'm not crazy, so I guess I'm doing well. It's this desire to sort of, I really do believe it. And I know people could say, well, actually, I have this or that. I really do believe it's this idea of like, if I'm contrarian, I'm smart.
Yeah.
It's this, like, I can disagree. If I disagree with the conventional wisdom.
The Aaron Rodgers sort of
right.
like way of
like,
thinking.
Like, therefore, I am right. Yeah. And it's like, you might just be wrong in a big way.
Yeah.
You might not be right because you've played chess and we're all playing checkers. You might have taken a dump on the checkers board and you lose all games.
Yeah.
And I just think that's what, you know, I do. I think this boost in numbers. And I said this with Hillary Clinton. I said Hillary Clinton was a front runner for the whole time in 2016. And I said, Americans hate front runners because they want to feel like they had something to do with the win. So they go, well, if I vote for Hillary, I'm just like, everybody expects her to win. So like, I'm not making a difference. But if I vote for Trump or if I vote for Jill Stein, I've taken a stand.
Right.
I've done. Now that stand is like lighting my house on fire, but I'm different and therefore better. And therefore I matter.
Yeah.
I matter because without me, my house would still be there, but everybody's house on my block is there. But if my house is burning, I'm different.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of contrarian equals smart. Sometimes contrarian just equals immensely wrong. And this idea of like, I think that is the strain going through this, which is like, if I associate with liberals, I've internalized the white supremacy. I've internalized the idea that liberals are nannies and that people of color are victims of America. And while that may be true, I don't want to feel that way. So I'd rather deny the truth to make myself feel like I am better off. And it's the joke where somebody once said, like, this guy brings a bomb on a plane. And they said, why'd you bring a bomb on a plane? And he goes, well, what are the chances of there being two bombs on a plane? Like, so he's saying, like, since I brought a bomb, statistically,
right,
there's never two bombs on a plane. But, like, you're fucking up the data.
Right.
By this. And that's what I feel like it is. It's like, well, what are the chances that a black guy would vote for Trump? Very low.
Yeah.
So I'm special. A Latin man, he called us rapists, but not me. I mean, it's the joke Chris Rock said about like rap songs where he goes, he was like doing a joke on like some vulgar rap song. And he says, and then he go in the club and every woman's dancing to it. And what do they say? He's not singing about me. It's kind of that. It's like, no. Trump demeans my people and is racist, but not me.
Yeah.
I'm a little special. And by voting for him, I reinforce the fallacy that I am somehow special. You get what I mean?
I do,
like
that
it's this like, it's like you're trying to reverse engineer your own success. And what better way to prove that you're successful or talk yourself into being successful than to vote for somebody who fucking hates you?
Yeah.
Because you're either so successful or you're an idiot. That's the only way you could do that. So I do believe that everybody voting for Trump is a bad person. Maybe not in 2016. There might have been 3-5% who were just upset and at the end of their rope. But if you're doing it in 2024, you're a bad person. And you're also probably kind of stupid. But you're definitely a bad person. So you might be smart. And that just probably means you're an even worse person than your run-of-the-mill piece of shit MAGA person. So on that pleasant bipartisan note, I will be voting for Kamala Harris, probably early voting. I'll probably get out there this Saturday or Sunday and go to my local early voting spot and get that vote done. Mm. And I'm going to save the punchdown of the week. I think we'll only go one ad break this week.
Great.
Don't sound so happy. But I do have some good punch downs of the week, folks. So we'll store those. We'll store those. But I just I hope people didn't tune out during the Frank Grillo, because that was, even though that's an maybe a little obscure for people, it is an on point cultural talk and entertainment talk for this show. Mm-hmm. And as far as MAGA goes, I mean, Trump's going to keep hitting new lows, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing the gun people do. I think we may have made this point during the guns. It's like, I'm so principled that kids getting killed won't change me. And there's this psychology of like, oh, wow, I am principled because, of course, I don't like dead kids. Well, it's also part of your principles that dead kids are expendable. Mm-hmm. That's also part of your principles. And if you vote for Trump, you can say, I'm putting country and economy over skin color and over race. But you're not. You're not picking country. You're actually picking against everything except some notion that you are special. It's like Trump makes white trash feel special, but he also makes assholes feel special. And that by joining his movement, you're looking past all the crudeness. See, I'm more data, Mike. I'm more about data and like the economy. And if he says things that I don't like, or if he calls my wife an ugly bitch, or he calls my kids retarded, I'm above that. That's how great I am, is that I rise above the cruelty and the slurs and the evil, because I'm so great, Mike. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, if I'm not doing that, I'm a fucking idiot and a horrible person, and I'm helping lead America into a decline that we'll never recover from. But it can't be that. So I guess I'm just better. Well, MAGA, you're the worst we've ever produced. So with 2 weeks to go, let's go Kamala Harris. I hope Trump loses. I hope he just fades off the globe, like hides in a Russian whorehouse for the rest of his life, and that all his kids lose their money and are homeless, and that his supporters cry and drink poisoned Kool-Aid. And then we can, when MAGA disappears and we stop, you know, opioids from doing what natural selection wanted them to do in Trump countries, we can make America great again. Okay? So just
dig it.
Frank Grillo, if you're out there, let's purge MAGA country. Where do you think Frank Grillo is politically? That's a tough
I would just
call.
Rather not ask.
Right? Yeah. That's one of those ones I'm like, your work seems so grounded that I think of you as a grounded person, but he is Italian, Mikey, so I don't know. Anyway, guys, thank you. I'm in Emporia, Virginia on Wednesday the 30th. That is the southernmost part of Virginia, so these are things I will probably not be saying at that show. Or if you're in northern North Carolina, so big show. Tickets are almost sold out already, so that's good. Because I think the guy who runs it is like a former like Formula One driver or something. Mm. So it always helps when the guy running the show is like, could you come down and do a show? I'm also a famous race car driver.
That does help.
So we'll sell tickets probably.
Yeah.
You think they're going to be like hot, like middle-aged blondes there?
Where is it? Virginia?
Emporia, Virginia, right above North Carolina. Or you think I need to be in like Tennessee or like. So
I don't know. I don't have much of an insight there.
I don't either. Anyway, come to the show, guys. That's the point. Emporia, Virginia, October 30th. Then I'm in Princeton, New Jersey, November 8th and 9th. I believe, I haven't officially confirmed, but I believe our show in Hartford has been canceled due to, you know, just artistic differences, meaning one of us cares about, no. Yeah, I think the Hartford show is done. So Princeton, my New Jersey people, we got Princeton beginning of November, right after the election. There's no better comic, I think, to go see. I mean that, than me right after the election. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
I'm pretty high up there. I'd be pretty high up on the list nationally of people you should go see right after the election.
Yes.
Either to drown your sorrows or to celebrate.
Yes.
And that's it. So everybody, I've seen a couple new reviews for the show on Apple, but obviously we have a lot more listeners and viewers than reviews. So let's really this week, maybe as a nice pre-election surprise for the show, let's crank up a lot of reviews on Spotify and Apple. If you're watching the show, go over and leave a review. If you're a listener, comment and watch the video product. And besides that, I think everybody here, You don't heed my warnings often or my requests, but go follow Slickback Studios on Instagram and or YouTube. If you use both, nice. Go follow on both. You know, this is a great studio, and you all like, that's the thing I keep, you know, unfortunately, this is what I say about my own comedy, but people are like, love Mike, love the show, the new format. Well, the best way to support that is to follow Slickback Studios on YouTube and on Instagram. You might discover other shows you like. Yeah. Maybe there'll be some bigwig fans.
Maybe, yeah.
And other things. So, Mike, if you have anything else to add, no.
I don't. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Wrap it up. Jesus Christ. Hey.